So we're beginning in September 21, 1913, and this is volume 11. The heading says, all the things that the soul does in the divine will and together with Jesus acquire his qualities, his life and his value. That's an incredible statement, okay? So I have a VIP on this one. Louisa says, this morning my beloved Jesus made himself seen with indescribable sweetness and affability, as if he wanted to tell me something very dear to him and of great surprise for me. So embracing me completely and pressing me to his heart, he told me, my beloved daughter, notice pressing me to his heart the same as John at the Last Supper. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. So that's John 13. I haven't got the verse. My beloved daughter, all the things that the soul does in my will and together with me, that means all the prayers, all the actions, all the steps, etc. They acquire my own qualities, my own life and my own value. My book says my same, which it's not English. See, all the things I did upon the earth, the prayers, the sufferings, the works, they're all in act. That means available, present now. They're all eternal and therefore present and will remain in eternity for the good of whoever wants them. My working differs from the way creatures operate. Now, for that, I want to give you Isaiah 55, verses 8 to 10. My ways are not your ways. My thoughts are different from yours. Isaiah 55, verses 8 to 10. Containing the creative power within myself, I speak and I create. That's terribly important. You have Genesis 1, 3. God said, let there be light, and there was light. Now, I could give you numerous things from the gospel where Jesus said, get up and walk, and the person was able to get up and walk because God's word is creative. Jesus said, this is my body and this is my blood. Okay, and it happened. So I speak and I create. Now, before I move on, I just want to illustrate that another little bit. If the Lord speaks in your heart, forgive in a particular situation, he automatically gives you the grace to do it. Forgive is not an order without the wonder of grace to enable you to do it. He actually helps you to actually put it into practice. So I speak and I create. Just as one day I spoke and I created the sun. That's the let there be light, Genesis 1:3. And this sun is always full of light and heat. And it always gives light and heat, as if it were in the act of receiving continuous creation from me. Now, the image that's given to you there is that the creation of the sun is happening instantaneously all the time. In other words, the divine will is actually keeping it in existence, just as the divine will is keeping us in existence and keeping everything in existence. So creation is continuous. So it's in the. It is as if it were receiving continuous creation from me without ever decreasing. Such was my operating upon the earth. Since I contained the creative power within myself, the prayers, the steps, the works that I did and the blood that I shed are in continuous act of praying, operating, walking, etc. In other words, everything is totally available to us. When we enter into the divine will, we can enter in and take anything that is in Jesus and make it our own and use it for the good of souls. So it's the same as the sun in continuous act of giving light. So my prayers continue. My steps are always in the act of running after souls, and so with all the rest. Otherwise, great difference would exist between my operation and that of the great saints. You see, the operation of the saints was in time and for their time. It doesn't continue forever. All of Jesus's actions were not only human, they were divine, and therefore they're available forever. Now, my daughter, listen to a beautiful, beautiful thing, not yet understood by creatures. All the things that the soul does together with me and in my will, just as they are my things, they are hers as well. But yours is mine, do you remember? The connection with my will and her operating together with me participate in the same creative power. So we participate in God's creative power when we enter into the divine will. It's absolutely fantastic. So Louisa said she remained ecstatic and with a joy that she couldn't contain. And she said, how is all this possible, Lord? And he said, whoever does not understand this can say they don't understand me. Don't put your two hands up. He says, if you don't understand this, you don't understand me. Isn't it absolutely amazing? Then he disappeared. But Louisa said, I can't say it well, and I don't know how to explain myself better. Who can tell all that he made me understand? You see, Louisa gets it all by infused knowledge. So it goes directly into her spirit and only gradually comes back into her intellect so that she can actually put words on it. And that's why half the time she understands, but she is not able to articulate it. Now, September the 25th, 1913, the divine will is the center of the soul. Now, here we're coming down to brass tacks. This is excellent. I told the confessor, Louisa said, that what Jesus had said to me, that the will of God is the center of the soul, and that this center is in the depth of the soul, and that spreading its rays like a sun, it gives light to the mind, sanctity to the actions, strength to the steps, life to the heart, power to the word and to everything. What a wonderful definition that is. And not only this, but also that while this center, the will of God, is inside of us, so that we may never escape from it, that is if you're living fully in the divine will, and so as to remain at our continuous disposal, never leaving us alone to separate even for 1 minute. At the same time, it is also in front of us, to our right, to our left, behind and everywhere. There's your breastplate of St. Patrick. Okay. But I want to give you for all of this 1 Corinthians 3:16. Know you not that you are the temple of the living God? So, the confessor didn't agree, and he said that the Most Holy Sacrament is our center. So on coming, Jesus said, my daughter, I had to make it in such a way that sanctity would be easy and accessible to all. Now notice he wants everyone to be saints. Unless they didn't want it, the choice is actually ours. So, I had to do this in all conditions, in all circumstances, and in every place. It's true that the Most Holy Sacrament is the centre, but who instituted it? Who subdued my humanity to enclose itself within the small circle of a host? Wasn't it my will? Therefore, my will always have primacy over everything. Okay. Besides, if everything is in the Eucharist, the priests who call me down from heaven into their hands and who are in contact with my sacramental flesh more than anyone else should be the holiest. That's logic, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And they should be the most good. But instead of that, he said some of them are the worst. That's because they haven't understood or grasped the enormity of the privilege that they have. Poor me, he said, how they treat me in the Most Holy Sacrament. And the many devout souls who receive me, perhaps even every day, they should be saints if the centre of the Eucharist were sufficient. But instead, and it's something to be cried over, they remain always at the same point, vain, irritable, punctilious, etc. Wow. That means people going to communion every day and not growing at all. Isn't that frightening? Mm-hmm. Okay. That means that the whole experience is external to you. You've not allowed the Lord to transform your your interior. Now, the opposite of that is a testimony of Saint Therese of Lisieux, who said that she was aware of growing in sanctity every time she received the Eucharist. Now, I've never come across anybody else who said those words except Therese. That she was aware of growing in sanctity every time she received the Eucharist. So Jesus is actually answering the objection of the priest here. And he's saying that if what the priest is saying only, then the logical thing is that priests and nuns and people going to Mass every day, they should be the holiest people on the earth. We should have no problems in the church, should we? Yeah. That's logic. Okay. On the other hand, don't forget that Jesus was a Jew. And they always argue on the one hand and on the other hand. Do you remember the fiddler on the roof? Mm-hmm. On the one hand and on the other hand. That's very Jewish. Okay. So on the other hand, there may be a mother. Now watch this. This is a very careful example that Jesus is giving. Who does my will. And who, because of her situation, in other words, she's got tiny infants at home or a sick child or whatever, not because she doesn't want to, she cannot receive me every day. And one sees that she is patient and she's loving and she carries the fragrance of the Eucharistic virtues within herself. Ah, is it perhaps the sacrament, or rather my will, to which she is submitted that keeps her subdued and makes up for the most holy sacrament? Isn't that a fascinating example? So what I want to give you there is Luke 10, 29 to 37, the story of the Good Samaritan. The one you think is sort of can't get to the top do the right thing in the sense of achieving what the others should be achieving, can get there. It's absolutely amazing. So she's doing the will of God at home. She can't get to Mass. It's not her problem. And so the will of God brings her to the holiness. So even more, I tell you, that the sacraments themselves produce fruits according to how souls are submitted to my will. Please put a VIP, NB or something on that. The fruits of the sacraments depend on how souls are submitted to my will. They produce effects according to the connection that souls have with the divine will. In other words, a person could mechanically receive Holy Communion and be in rebellion against God's will in their souls about something. Therefore, they have not got the dispositions to actually let the fruits of the Holy Eucharist bring them into sanctity because they're in rebellion against God's will. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And if there's no connection with my will, they may receive communion but will remain on an empty stomach. They won't get anything. They may go to confession. They may still always remain dirty. The priest may say, I forgive you. But the condition for receiving the sacrament of confession, and many Catholics don't appear to me to understand this, the condition is not that the priest will give you absolution. The condition is the resolution not to sin again. If the resolution not to do that sin again is not there, then the sacrament isn't even valid. The priest may not know whether you have that resolution or not, or he may not check it out. Okay? So they may come before my sacramental presence, that is in the Holy Eucharist in the church. But if our wills do not meet, I will be as though dead for them, because my will alone, now ring the little word alone, produces all goods and gives life to the very sacraments in the soul who lets herself be subdued by it. And those who do not understand this, it means that they're babies in religion. Whoops. Now that's giving it to us, isn't it? So for babies in religion, I want to give you Hebrews 5, verses 11 to 14. Hebrews 5, where the author is saying, you're only on milk and you should be on solid food at this particular stage, you know. And then go back a little bit and for receiving nothing at Holy Communion, I want to give you 1 Corinthians 11, verses 17 to 24. Sorry, 17 to 22. And also verses 27 to 32. That's Paul warning you that you could receive communion and actually sin. Is that okay? So let's go on to October the 2nd, 1913. And I have a VIP on this one as well. When the human will unites to the divine, the life of Jesus is formed in that soul. Just look what happens to us. So, continuing my usual state, Blessed Jesus made himself seen inside of me, but so identified with me that I could see his eyes within mine, his mouth within mine. What she's seeing is she's getting a vision, a visual picture of what the union is like. Okay. And when I saw this, he said to me, "My daughter, look at how I identify myself with the soul who does my will. Who does my will is lives in my will." Okay. Making myself one with her, I become her very life. So that's Galatians 2:20. I no longer live, Christ lives in me. And it's also John 14, verses 20 to 21. You in me and I in you. Okay. So I become her very life because my will is inside and outside of that soul. Now he's going to tell you four very interesting things. It can be said, number one, that my will is like the air that she breathes, which gives life to everything. Number two, my will is like light that makes one see and understand everything. Number three, my will is like heat that warms and fertilizes and makes one grow. And number four, my will is like heart that palpitates, like hands that work, like feet that walk. And when the human will unites with the divine will, my life is formed in that soul. Now, he means his real life. It's not a mystical thing. A mystical thing is not nearly as deep as his real life living within us. And in all the future volumes, he's going to absolutely insist that it's his real life. Okay. Then having received communion, Louisa said, "I was saying to Jesus, I love you." Okay. Now you're going to hear a lovely thing about the rounds here for the rest of this message. So put a little heading there, rounds. My daughter, he said, "Do you really want to love me? Say, Jesus, I love you with your will." Now, he's telling you straight what to do. Because you see, if we say I love you with your will, then it means I am loving you with a divine love. If I simply say I love you, I'm only loving him with the human love. Okay. So I love you with your will. And since my will fills heaven and earth, your love will surround me everywhere. And your I love you will resound up there in the heavens and down into the deepest abysses. Isn't that absolutely amazing? Mm-hmm. Now, I wonder what he means by abysses. I wouldn't imagine hell is listening, would you?
I wouldn't think so.
No. So all the poor souls in purgatory are hearing this wonderful love coming up from the earth. Okay. In the same way, if you want to say, I adore you, I bless you, I praise you, you will say it united with my will. So I adore you with your will, I bless you with your will, and so on. And you will fill heaven and earth with adorations, blessings, praises, and with thanksgiving. And we do it in the name of all. And so we're saying to the Lord, I want you to take it. The whole human race is saying this. That is past, present, and future. In my will, things are simple, easy, and immense. My will is everything, so much so that my very attributes, what are they? A simple act of my will. So if justice, goodness, wisdom, fortitude, for example, follow their course, my will precedes them, accompanies them, and places them in the attitude of working. In sum, they do not move from one point of my volition. Therefore, whoever takes my will takes everything. Now, will you please colour that with some colour that's going to make you really look at it? That if you take the divine will, you take everything. Even more, she can say that her own life is ended, and so you, what is ended? It means the weaknesses have ended, the temptations, the passions, the miseries have ended, because all things lose their rights in one who does my will. For my will has primacy over everything and the right to everything. That's a wonderful statement, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Okay. And so one of the ways in which throughout these writings, the Lord gives you hints about how to discern, you know, if you ask the question, where am I at? That what you've just read will help you to discern. We don't know absolutely where we're at. But it helps you to discern whether you're in a healthy place or a place you need to shift from. Okay? Because he says that if we're genuinely living in the divine will, we will notice that the weaknesses and the temptations and the passions go down, down, down. They're not the upper. They're not the things that are taking over. They're not the things that are occupying your mind. They're actually going lesser and lesser and lesser until you reach the point that Louisa reached where she didn't remember them. There's one wonderful moment where Louisa's going through agony. Now, it must be a higher volume than this. I don't know. I can't quote the volumes at this stage. I'm teaching too many of the volumes at the same time. But she said to Jesus, she was in such agony, she said, I can actually feel myself. You and I would consider that perfectly normal. But for her, she was so taken up in the divine will that to get back up to actually feeling her body, she thought she had done something drastic. Now, that's miles ahead of what's being said here. OK, but that's the discernment. The passions die down. All of this stuff dies down. The weaknesses, the miseries. And you're not in the struggles you were in before. It's one of the bits of discernment. Isn't it a good bit of discernment? So November the 18th, 1913, when the human will and the divine are opposed, one forms the cross of the other. And he gives a very interesting description of this. Louisa said she was thinking about her poor state and how even the cross has banished from her. Okay. Now, for Louisa, Galatians 6:14 fits perfectly. As for me, the one thing I can boast about is the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom the world is crucified to me and I to the world. And that's Louisa. Okay, that's Galatians 6:14. So Jesus is going to give her an example which is the exact opposite of that. And the example is for us who are at a much lesser place than Louisa. My daughter, he said, when two wills are opposed to each other, one forms the cross of the other. The way we would say that in Ireland is you have trouble if two wills cross each other. You have heavy weather. Okay. But Jesus is using this language because of what he wants to say. So it is that's the way it is between me and souls. When their wills are opposed to mine, I form their cross and they form mine. In other words, if we are opposing the Lord, he has to try and bring you back towards his will. So you're going to meet opposition from him. So he forms your cross. And because we're opposing him, we create suffering for him. So we become his cross and he becomes ours. And there's another bit of discernment for you, and that is that the more we live surrendered to the divine will, the less this crossing happens. Less and less and less and less. Jesus said, I am the long beam of the cross and they're the short one. And crossing each other, they form the cross. Now, when the will of the soul unites with mine, the beams are no longer crossed, but united. And therefore, the cross is no longer a cross. That's the language he's using here. There's a wonderful statement from a saint you may not know, Saint Madeleine du Clercq. Have you ever heard of her? She's the foundress of the Community of Sacred Heart Sisters. I think that's what they're called. And her statement is that the surrendered soul has found paradise on earth. You see, the surrendered soul is the one who has surrendered to the divine will. So then you've got the paradise of the divine will taking over. Okay. So the cross is no longer a cross. Have you understood? And he said, besides that, I sanctified the cross. It was not the cross that sanctified me. The cross was an instrument of shame, but Jesus sanctified it. It's not the cross that sanctifies. It's the resignation to my will that sanctifies the cross. That's terribly, terribly important. Now, the church has taught that all down the centuries. It's not the fact that you're sick that makes you wonderful in the eyes of God. It's the fact that you have surrendered to the divine will, whether he wants to heal you or take you home. That is the important thing, the surrender to the divine will. It's the resignation to my will that sanctifies the cross. Therefore, even the cross can do as much good insofar as it's connected to my will. But if you've got somebody going in rebellion against God for something that happens, how can God be a good God and do that to me? So that's rebellion against God's will. So if they're like that, then they're going to have lots of opposition coming against them. So the cross can only do good insofar as it's connected with the divine will. Not only this, the cross sanctifies and crucifies part of the person. But my will doesn't spare anything. It sanctifies everything. Now you have to watch this one. It crucifies the thoughts, the desires, the will, the affection, the heart, everything. Now, if you studied the works of St. John of the Cross, as I did, he says, and he's 16th century, he said that God gives us two great purifications in life. And one purification is the ordinary stuff that hits us in everyday life. You know what I mean? The stuff that goes against you and things that happen in you and in your family and among people and all the rest. He said that's the first purification. And the people who are generous with God, most of them will take that and they'll go on. But he said the second purification is completely interior and most people won't take it. That's the purification of the thoughts, the desires, the will, the affections, the heart. Now, for someone going into divine will, you have to allow this interior purification because the divine will spirituality is in completely interior, completely. And if the divine will is to operate in me, he can't be meeting dirty rooms in my thought life. And he can't be meeting shabby things in my desires. And he can't be meeting unhealthy things in my will and my affections and so on. Everything has to be purified so that the divine will can actually reign on the earth. Am I making sense?
Yes.
Therefore, we have to say yes to the the interior purification. And he will do it to the extent that you allow it. And so it's entirely up to yourself if you say to the Lord, look, I want the divine will 100%. Do what you like. If we say that to him and actually mean it, he will take it on from there. That's like me entering a school for training pilots. I say, I want to be a pilot. I'm not just coming here to look at the rest of you. You know what I mean? And not only that, but I want to be a bomber pilot or I want to be a this pilot or a that pilot or the other pilot. Depending on what I want to be will depend on how they will train me. Does that make sense? Yeah. It's exactly the same with the Lord. So there's a decision here that goes on between myself and the Lord and nobody else. Yeah. It's like that wonderful moment when Maximilian Kolbe was 6 years old and he had a vision of Our Lady, and she offered him the white crown of purity in the priesthood and the red crown of martyrdom. And this kid, whose mother had told him he was incorrigible only an hour earlier, said, "I'll have the two." When he got the two, he asked for the whole package deal. Now, a number of the saints actually asked the Lord for the whole package deal. Saint Therese was one of them as well. Okay. So it's like, I want to get there, I don't care about the price. All right, that's actually terribly important. Now, Jesus says, "My will is light." Now, I want to give you 1 Timothy 6:16. 1 Timothy 6:16. God dwells in unapproachable light. Okay. I also give you 1 John 1:5, that God is light. But you see, as we go on in these volumes, you will see that God dwells in unapproachable light. It's only in the divine will that he brings us into this light, and he'll bring you deeper and deeper and deeper as you surrender to the divine will. Okay. It shows to the soul the necessity of this sanctification and complete crucifixion. Matthew 5:17. So this divine light of the divine will shows us the necessity of this purification that we need, in such a way that she herself incites me, we would say encourages me, to accomplish the crafting of my will upon her. In other words, we actually give him permission to go ahead, even though we won't like the process. Therefore, the cross and the other virtues are content as long as they get something. But if they can pierce the soul with 3 nails, they boast of their triumph. On the other hand, my will, which does not know how to do incomplete works, is not content with just 3 nails, but with as many nails for as many acts of my will which I dispose for that soul. Now, I said a lot in that last breath. Okay, watch this again now. He says, if you're living just the ordinary spirituality before divine will, the virtues, in other words, the level of sanctity that a soul can reach, if it reaches what he calls the 3 nails, in other words, that you've allowed suffering, then most people are satisfied. Okay. But he says the divine will might start there, but it certainly doesn't finish there. The divine will wants as many nails for as many acts. In other words, every act in the divine will has to be complete and perfect. There can be nothing of me in it. If there's something of me in it, meaning the negative side of me, then it's not an act of the divine will. And he said, look at this. For as many acts of my will which I dispose for that soul. In other words, he has disposed for each one of us to give a certain number of acts to him. And each one of us has to do our, well, as the children would say, we have to do our ekkers. You have to do it. The divine will is expecting a certain amount. Okay. Now, for that, I want to give you Galatians 5:24. Galatians 5:24. You cannot belong to Christ Jesus unless you crucify all self-indulgent passions and desires. Paul seemed to understand. And he back there 2,000 years. You cannot belong to Christ Jesus unless you crucify all self-indulgent. Now, Paul has already described that the way of self-indulgence is that way and the way of the Holy Spirit is that way. They're two entirely different ways. Okay. And what Paul was asking for there is the 100% giving. So, November the 27th, 1913. And I have a VIP on this one as well. The divine will is the highest point that can exist, both in heaven and on earth. It's the highest point. So we're being called to the highest point. So Jesus said to Louisa, my daughter, as many complete acts of my will as the soul performs, so many parts of me does she take into herself. And the more she takes of my will, the more light she acquires, forming the sun within herself. Now, the sun is a source of light. Okay. Now, notice, for each complete act, a complete act is that you have done an act in the divine will and the divine will is fully involved and your will has surrendered fully to the divine will. Okay. It's a complete act. It's not just me wishing I was doing something in the divine will. Now, for each complete act in the divine will, we take a part of Jesus into us. So if we do many divine acts, we're taking many parts of him into us. And the more we do them, the more we are incorporating Jesus into us. That's what he's saying. That's why I have a VIP on it. And you create, Jesus says, you create a son within yourself. And this son is formed by the light that she takes from my will. Now, the light is the divine will. So that means we're taking part of this light into ourselves. And the rays of this sun are linked to the rays of my divine sun. So each one is reflected in the other. Each one flashes through the other and they dart through each other. And as they do this, the sun that my will has formed in the soul becomes larger and larger. Now, he will tell you in the higher volumes that our capacity when we start is very, very small. And the more we respond to the divine will and the more acts we do, that he enlarges our soul so that we can take more. And then he enlarges it and he keeps on enlarging it as long as you will do acts in the divine will. So your capacity for God at the end of your living in the divine will on earth will be incredibly greater than when you started. And the thing is that if you're filling your life with these acts, when you go to heaven, you're starting at a point that many of the saints in heaven have not arrived at yet. Why? Because you've done all of this on earth. So you know a relay race, they start at different points. You'll be starting way ahead of many saints. That's amazing, isn't it? Yeah. And you will know God more than them because you have operated in the divine will all the time. Many, many souls wait until death to surrender to the divine will. So, and then the purification that they didn't accept on earth has to be done in purgatory. And Jesus keeps telling us, and we're going to see this in the next message, that for a person actually genuinely living in the divine will, there cannot be purgatory because it's been done in all the purification of the thoughts and the words and the actions and the this and that and the other. The purification is done. And so the soul goes directly to heaven. Isn't that the most incredible good news? Yeah. So let's read it slowly. This and the next message go together and they're absolutely brilliant. So that sun will be formed in the soul, become larger and larger. So Louisa said, oh, here he is again. He's talking about his will. And Jesus said, because obviously Louisa didn't grasp. We find it difficult to take on board the greatness of this. He said, my will is the highest point which can exist both in heaven and on earth. So you enter heaven at a very high point. And when the soul has reached it, she has subdued everything and has done everything. I put VIP in the margin for myself. In other words, when we have given our will 100% to him, he asks for nothing else. Now, if you want a summary of the Old Testament, it's this. I only ever asked you to do my will and you have rebelled completely against it. That's a summary of the entire Old Testament. I only ever asked you to do my will. So Jesus said that when we have reached this point, there's nothing left for her to do but to dwell over these heights, enjoy them. This is why the eagle is the symbol of the soul in the divine will. So you're living up at the great heights. Enjoy them and understand this will of mine more and more, which is not yet understood well, either in heaven or on earth. Now, why would you say it's not understood well in heaven? Well, only the saints had surrendered to the divine will on earth, but they hadn't lived in the divine will. And all the others only surrendered in death. So they started back much further. It's an incredible thing. But all our acts in the divine will enhance all the saints. They can participate in them, which is really amazing. And the souls in purgatory can participate as well. I gave you that last week, didn't I? So Jesus said, there is much time for you to be spent in the divine will because you've understood very little. Now, this is 1914 and Louisa won't die until 1947. So she's got time yet to grasp it. And like Louisa, we can understand these writings to a certain extent, but actually taking it in and registering the fullness is another matter altogether. And I find that when I go back to an earlier volume that I've taught before and I read it, I say, are you sure you read that before? It comes across completely new. Completely new. We're not able to actually absorb everything we read. Intellectually, you may understand it at the moment. So that's why a lot of meditative reading has got to be done. Yeah. And we've got to say to the Lord, look, will you put that into my spirit? The head won't take it. Sometimes our intellect can't take it. So we just say to him, just put it in. It's like a child not understanding nutrition, but it opens the mouth and the mother puts the food in anyway, and the child gets the benefit, you know. So we don't always have to understand to benefit from this. So my will, Jesus said, is so great that whoever does it, that lives in it, can call himself a god on the earth. Notice a small g. Now for that, I want to give you Psalm 82, verse 6. Psalm 82, verse 6. I said you are gods, all of you sons of the Most High. Okay. I also want to give you Psalm 8. Lord, what is man that you would even think about him, or mortal man that you'd give him a second thought, and yet you've made him little less than a god. You, with glory and honour, you've crowned him, giving him power over the works of your hands. Now, so my will is so great that whoever does it can call himself a god on the earth. And just as my will forms the beatitude of heaven, these gods who do my will form the beatitude of the earth and of those who are near them. Because the more peace and serenity and unity and grace and everything that goes into you, everybody around you benefits, even on a completely non-verbal level. Even if they don't ever acknowledge it, it's actually happening. That's like saying, if I lift up the blinds in the morning, the sun will come in or the light will come in and everything in the room will benefit. The light doesn't say, well, I'll only go to this place or that place and they don't deserve it and this one does. The light doesn't do that. And it's the same, not only in the house you live in, but in the area you live in, the country you live in. Everybody benefits. That's the incredible thing about the divine will. So they form the beatitude of the earth and of those who are near them. There's no good that exists on the earth which is not to be attributed to these gods of my will. Isn't that absolutely incredible? Mm-hmm. Now, he says many times in Louisa's writings that he only looks after the earth because of the people living at this level. So whether as direct or indirect cause, everything is due to them. Just as there is no happiness in heaven which doesn't come from me, so there's no good on the earth which doesn't come from them. So beside that, I want you to put Romans 8, verses 19 to 23. Because in that text, Paul says that the whole of creation is waiting for the sons of God to stand up and to bring everything back into God's order. And we know now that these sons of God are the people living in the divine will. So March the 8th, 1914. As the soul lives and dies in the divine will. See, that's the incredible privilege, to die in the divine will. There's no good which she doesn't carry with herself. The value of one single instant in the divine will. Isn't that amazing? So this is an extremely important message. So we'll skip the introductory bit. And Jesus said to Louisa, "My daughter, the soul who lives in my will." This is a wonderful thing. I want you to list it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Now, the soul who lives in my will can say of everything I do, it's mine. This, because the will of the soul is so identified with mine that whatever my will does, she does as well. So as she lives and dies in my volition, that's number one. Everything is yours is mine. So this is number two. As she lives and dies in my volition, there's no good which she does not carry with herself, because there is no good which my will does not contain. So you go to heaven very, very enriched. Okay. Number three, my will is the life of all the good that creatures do. We would say the source of everything. The next number, therefore, as the soul dies in my will, she carries with her, watch this, the masses that are celebrated, the prayers and the good works that are done, because they are all the fruits of my will. That's a good deal of baggage, isn't it? Yeah. Now, the next number, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, number five, isn't it?
Yeah.
And this is still very little, he said, compared to the working of my will itself, which the soul carries with her as her own. Number six, one instant of the working in my will is enough to surpass all the works of all creatures, past, present and future. Now, the only thing you can do with this stuff is read it very slowly and try and take it in. So the next number. So as the soul dies in my will, there is no beauty that matches her, nor heights, riches, sanctity, wisdom or love. Nothing. Nothing can equal her, because she's carrying God back to God. Isn't that incredible? Mm-hmm. Now, next number. As the soul who dies in my will enters the heavenly fatherland, not only will the heaven's gates open, but the entire heaven will bow to welcome her into the celestial dwelling. That means all the saints and all the angels. Because this soul goes back to God with more privilege and more riches than all the saints put together, because they didn't live in the divine will on earth. Okay? So the entire heaven will bow to welcome her into the celestial dwelling to honour the working of my will. What should I tell you then of the feast and the surprise of all the blessed in seeing this soul completely marked? Notice the completely, that's 100%. Because we're dealing with someone 100% given to the Lord. Completely marked by the working of my divine will. In seeing in this soul one who has done everything in my will. This is the next number. That everything she has done during her life, each saying, each thought, each word, each work, each action of hers are many sons that adorn her. Now you can see why he told us a couple of messages back that we needed the thoughts and the words and everything else purified so that they could become these great sons, so that they could become something completely divine. Each one will be different from the other in light and in beauty. And in seeing this soul, many divine rivulets that will inundate all the blessed is the next number. In other words, everybody in heaven will benefit from the riches that this soul brings back. They will inundate all the blessed and flow also upon earth for the good of pilgrim souls, since heaven cannot contain them. I find that absolutely fascinating. And I want you to put John 7, 37 to 39, and you'll get a new understanding of it. Because Jesus said, if you come and drink, out of your own heart will flow fountains of living water. Now, we understood that this means that you have plenty to help other people on earth. But Jesus is saying that the soul who goes back to heaven with the fullness of the divine will has so much that heaven can't hold it and it has to flow out onto the earth. Like that. It's unbelievable, isn't it? I find that very hard to take in. Can you take that in? I mean, I can read it and my intellect sort of understands the English, but the concept, wow, it's incredible. Yeah. Ah, my daughter, Jesus said, and this is the next number, my will is the portent of portents. It is the secret to finding light, sanctity and riches. It is the secret to all goods. But it is not known and therefore not appreciated nor loved. You at least, he said, appreciate and love it and make it known to those whom you see disposed. Now, will you underline that last bit? You must only introduce the divine will to people who are ready. Don't introduce it to people who are not ready. You'll only get a very negative kickback. They just won't understand. But to those who are disposed, yeah. Another day, Louisa said, as I was suffering, I felt that I was unable to do anything and I felt oppressed. But Jesus said, my daughter, do not worry yourself. Try only to be abandoned in my will. That's terribly important. The surrendered soul has found paradise on earth. Try only to be abandoned to my will. And I will do everything for you, he said, because one single instant in my will is worth more than all the good you could possibly do in your entire life. Now, I think you need to put some kind of a big ring around that to make sure you actually will come back to this and really look at it. One single instant in my will is worth more than all the good you could possibly do in your entire life. Now you know the value of a divine will act. And nobody has to encourage you to do them after that. Because when we know that something is really, really worth it, it makes all the difference, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Okay. And then Louisa said that on another day, Jesus said, my daughter, one who truly does my will, that is, lives in my will, in everything that occurs within her, both in the soul and in the body, in whatever she feels or suffers, she can say, Jesus is suffering, Jesus is oppressed, Jesus is walking, Jesus is whatever. In fact, everything that souls do to me reaches me, even in the soul in whom I dwell. In fact, everything that souls do to me reaches me, even in the soul in whom I dwell, who does my will. That means if the divine will is in us, Jesus is in us, and so everything that souls do reaches him, and it'll reach him in us as well. So as we develop, we will feel the pain or the distress or whatever, and we make reparation for it. So, if the coldness of souls reaches me, my will feels it. And since my will is the life of the soul, that's the one living in the divine will, it happens as a consequence that the soul feels it too. So the next time you feel kind of coldness in prayer and that, don't just presume it's yours, that it's somebody else that the Lord wants you to make reparation or substitution for them. And it changes everything when you just think of it that way. You say, Lord, you know, this thing that I'm feeling, if that's coming from somebody who's in desperate need, then I want to join you in making reparation for that person. So instead of troubling yourself over this coldness, see what he's saying? As if it was her own, she must remain around me to console me and repair for the coldness that souls send me. So there you have it. In the same way, if she feels distractions, oppressions and other things, she must remain around me to relieve me and repair, because those are not her things. They're the ones coming at me from other souls. Now, that's a nice little bit of discernment for you, isn't it? That whatever you're feeling inside, that you say to the Lord, this is somebody in need, you know. And sometimes, as happened to me last night, a name will come into your head for no reason that you can think of. And I realize that soul needs to be prayed for. Why should I think of that person now? Mm-hmm. You know, like the name that came into my head last night hadn't been in my head for over 20 years. Oh. And because of the age of the person whose name it was, I realized he was probably dying. But it didn't come to me until about 3 a.m, the hour of mercy. You know, so I'm just alerting you to the fact that all of us will get things like this. It's to be alert to the message. I said, the hour of mercy, that person is probably dying. Immediately bathed them in the precious blood of the Lamb, you know. And this is our privilege, that we can help people so incredibly, you know. So they're not necessarily your things, but mine, Jesus said. Therefore, the soul who lives of my will, that lives out of the divine will feel many different pains according to the offences that souls give to me. But in a sudden way and almost in one start, because I noticed that when I prayed for that name that came to me during the night, once I had bathed that person in the precious blood of the Lamb, instant sleep came. See, you just need to be alert to the fact that you are being asked to do this for somebody at a very important moment. So on the other hand, she will also feel indescribable joys and contentment. And if in the first she must occupy herself with consoling and repairing me, in the joys and contentment, she also must delight. Only then does my will find my own interest. In other words, his interest is in the salvation of souls. Otherwise, it would remain saddened and unable to carry out what my volition contains. Now, another day, he said, and this is a VIP one, and if you tell people this who don't understand all the other things in the divine will, they're going to tell you you're crazy. My daughter, one who does my will, that lives in my will, can by no means go to purgatory. Now, look who's speaking. It's the Lord himself. Because my will purges the soul of everything. We've had that in the previous messages. After keeping her so jealously during her life in the custody of my volition, how could I allow the fire of purgatory to touch her? At the most, she may lack some clothing. I absolutely love that. Mm. You may need a dip. Do you know what I mean? But my will, before revealing the divinity to her, will clothe her with all that she may lack. Isn't that something else? And then he said, I reveal myself. So about that clothing, I want to give you some references. In the scriptures, that clothing is the garment of grace and the garment of salvation. So I want to give it to you in Genesis 3:7 first. That before Adam and Eve sinned, you're told specifically they were not wearing clothes. But after they sinned, you were told they were naked, which has nothing to do with clothes, because they didn't have clothes before or after. And they were told that God made clothes for them later. And that means that God has to re-clothe them in grace. Okay. So Mark 5:15 is a demoniac that Jesus clothed after he delivered him. Luke 15:22 is the prodigal son gets the garment of grace when he goes back to the father. And there's a wonderful one in Revelation 16:15. And if you just read it out of context, you'd say it's very strange. Revelation 16:15. Now, Revelation 16:15 says, John says that when the Lord returns, make sure you're not found without your clothes. Mm-hmm. And somebody not understanding scripture and reading that would think that he's talking about streaking. Mm-hmm. And John is saying that when the Lord returns, make sure you have your garment of salvation, because he will be returning in judgment. You see, so it's the garment of salvation. Okay. And it's represented by that white garment we put on a child in baptism. Okay. So we'll do another one. March 14, 1914. How hard it is for Jesus not to content the one who does his will and takes the whole of him. Now notice the whole of him. So there's your Deuteronomy 6:4-10. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind and being. Okay. So Louisa said, today I was fusing all of myself in Jesus, but so much so as to feel the whole of Jesus alive, look at this, and real within me. This is not some kind of just sort of mystical grace. This is a genuine bilocation of the Lord. Is that okay? While I was feeling him, he said to me, but in such a tender and touching way as to make my heart crack, she said, my daughter, it is too hard for me not to content one who lives in my will. Do you see, I've no more hands, nor feet, nor heart, nor eyes, nor mouth. I have nothing left. It's my will which you have taken. You in my will, you took possession of everything. So I've nothing left. This is why, in spite of the many grave evils that inundate the earth, the deserved chastisements are not pouring upon it, because it's hard for me not to content you. Isn't that amazing? Because of one person, he'd hold back all the chastisements. Besides, how can I do that if I have no hands and you do not give them to me? If they become absolutely necessary to me, I will be forced to steal them from you. Or to convince you that you yourself would give them to me. How hard it is for me, how hard it is for me to displease one who does my will. Isn't that absolutely amazing? Yeah. You know, the church has always taught us that we are his hands and feet, haven't they? Mm-hmm. And we are his tongue, we are his eyes and ears, because we're the body of Christ, okay? And Jesus says that if you take that up to the level of the divine mode and the divine will, he finds it extremely difficult not to content you. I think you should remember that, shouldn't you? So Louisa said, I remain surprised at this teaching. My book says speaking. It's a teaching. Not only this, but I could really see that I had the hands, feet and the eyes of Jesus and so on. And I said to him, Jesus, let me come. Let me come, of course, is let me die. He said, give me a little more life in you and then you will come. This is only 1914 and she has until 40. Well, not really. It depends on whether it's his eternal clock or your time clock.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. With the Lord, 1,000 years is like a single day. So this is 1914 and she will live until 47. So what he's saying is, will you give me a little bit of your time on the earth? This is extremely important, and I'm going to stop there. It's so important I want to stop there, because he's saying the only time that you can do anything for God is on the earth. Once your job is over, you can't do anything more for him. It's on the earth that we have the privilege of serving God, and we have the privilege of doing things for the kingdom of God, and of lending Jesus our eyes and our ears and our mouth and our hands and our feet and everything. It's fantastic, isn't it? Yeah. So I want to leave it there, because it's very rich food tonight.